Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. Like always, I have a question for you. Are you aware of your shadow self? Do you understand your dark side? In today's podcast and post, we continue our study of Galatians and explore how internal freedom is entangled in the captivity of our flesh. In other words, there's a constant dance between shadow and light, flesh and spirit, that goes on within us. Join me now as we learn about our dark side and we free ourselves from the old binary framework of good versus evil. We'll explore the only possible reason our shadow can exist in the first place and why that allows us to see beyond everything. Hello, everybody. Welcome back for another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host. My name is Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things that I do, just like you. I'm so glad to have you here. Welcome to the broadcast. Welcome to Sunday. And welcome to episode number 173. Folks, if you're just tuning in, if you're one of the new folks who have just subscribed to this podcast or this newsletter, I want to welcome you. I want to say thank you for joining. Tell your friends about it because this is content you're not going to get just anywhere. This is undiscovered in some ways, certainly not by you because you're listening, but by a large share, it's an undiscovered treasure chest of things that will make you think. Content that makes you go, Well, today we continue in our study of Galatians, so if you aren't aware, we're in the midst of it. We've been doing this since the beginning of the year. We're in chapter 5, and we've kind of transitioned now, and we're kind of looking deeper inside of us, the internal aspects of personal freedom. You see, Paul has been building a large case about how the gospel is a message of freedom that frees all people, all comers, from institutional power, and he was referring primarily to that of religion. But there's more to it. It's not just an external freedom proclamation. The gospel is an internal freedom proclamation. What we discover in life as we go through this next part of the series is that so many of us are not free on the inside. We're stuck in our old frameworks, our old habits, our old feelings, our own patterns, our baggage, or whatever it is. And as a result, it never allows us to live freely on the outside. And this is a huge frame shift. And once we kind of get the understanding of what Paul is teaching, we're going to have a huge experience of liberation. And so I hope you'll tune in now as we focus on episode 173 called The Shadow, Our Interplay with the Light. Shadow, the interplay with the light. And I guess the best way to start this off is by pointing out that great artists know that amazing art is a dance between shadow and light. Isn't that true? When you go to a museum, if you're in New York, you go to MoMA, you go to some fine art museum, the Louvre in France, or just look at any good painting or any picture or any good work, it's true. Good art is the interplay between shadow and light. It's certainly true in photography, especially black and white. We see it in fine art. Now, we can see this also in music, right? Highs and lows, brighter and darker tension. We see it in sport, right? Fast and slow, intense and rest. Business has a flow of light and dark. And politics, certainly, right? So if you gain the eyes to see, you see that shadow and light interplay constantly within everything. And this is internally true for ourselves as well. And I think if we ask anybody, hey, do you have a dark side? Everybody's going to say, well, I think we all have a little bit of a dark side. And it's true that we all have a shadow inside of us. And so often that's as far as the conversation goes. Hey, we need to work on getting rid of our shadow. We need to brighten up our dark side. But you see, folks, the only reason a shadow exists within us is because light also exists within us. And it's casting the shadow. The light is shining on the structures if you will, and revealing what is there. And so a shadow is really two-dimensional. It takes the form of that which is real and perfectly mimics it, sort of. But the shadow itself is unconscious. It's not ultimately something that can be real. Now, you can say a shadow is real. I can measure it. I can see it. You can't really touch it. You can't smell it, taste it, feel it. It's the two-dimensional nature of reality. So it's very limited in its reality. And our shadow disappears in complete darkness, right? It's because, like all darkness, it's composed of non-light, right? Or nothing. So the shadow isn't made of anything. It's simply the absence of the light. And the light is being obscured by something. And that something is different than the shadow itself, right? The shadow of the horse is not the same as the horse, but it reflects the horse. It points to the horse. It illuminates the horse. See how this works? There's a dynamic here that I'm hoping that this illustration helps you understand what's going on. Shadow is the nothing that wants to be a something, right? It's not really a thing. It's the thing that exists because of a non-light, a non-thing. And it wants to look like something because that's all it can do, is mimic the thing that's obscuring the light. See, it's the false self that cannot stand in the light of truth. The smallest amount of illumination exposes our shadow, which shrinks as brightness increases. You put enough light around an object and there will be no shadow. So eradicating our shadow self is simply not possible so long as we desire the light that makes our shadow visible in the first place. And this, I hope, is the way to help you, to help so many people who come from all different religions and faith systems, who are in this eternal battle between good and evil and trying to elevate the good and diminish the evil, right? So you want more light and less darkness. This is the path of most people in the world. And I know that we all give vent to our dark side from time to time. Some of us, it's all the time. But most people truly want to be better than they are. And they find that when they engage in that process, it's much harder than they ever imagined. And this is Paul's whole point about freedom and about how it's not as easy as you think. See, like a good painting, a beautiful life is the dance or the interplay between shadow and light. And every world religion has a name for our shadow. It might be sin. You might call it Maya or Mara if you're from Buddhism. Some people call it Satan or a demon or something, some evil presence within you waging war against your soul. You could call it Pesha or Zui, right? Each tradition has this shadow idea. Each tradition has a recipe for eradicating, extracting, exterminating, or having victory over this dark side, this shadow that lurks within all of us. And see, nearly all belief systems fall into a binary framework, whether they intend to or not. And they view this as a binary, meaning it's an either-or, an on-off switch, right? And the binary that they fall into, and this is all world religions, folks, they fall into either our sins or our shadow side make us into sinners, right? You either become a sinner because of all the bad things you've done, or the other side is that we sin because we're first sinners, right? We do bad things because there's something evil inside of us in the first place. And so no matter how elaborate we make our sin management system, this binary framework always serves those in power because it inevitably requires the herd to look towards the institution for a tune-up, right? If your church is telling you you've got demons inside you that you need to cast out and you need to pray through and you need to eradicate, then every time you leave that institution, you go out into the world and you feel tempted, or you feel weak, or you feel vulnerable, or you give in and do things that you wish you wouldn't have done, then you have to go back to the institution to get help, to get cleansed, to get purified. And so often people in their life, their experience of faith, their experience in religion is that of a leaking tire. It's always deflating, and they have to go back week after week to get pumped back up. You see, we don't want to be overcome by darkness and perish. And that's the subscript that religion puts in it. Ooh, you got this shadow inside you that's waging war against your soul. And if you don't fight it, it will win, and you will be lost forever. That's the threat. That's the fear that's used to kind of control and give you behavior modifications. And throughout history, it's really helped moral behavior, because that's how humanity has always framed our morality within this good versus evil. But what if there is another way to see this? Have you ever considered there might be? Now, I've proven in this series that the gospel, the message of the gospel, as Paul understands it, not just in Galatians, but in Ephesians and Colossians and all of his other work, the message of the gospel is that it's a third way. Like, if you're Eastern, you understand third way thinking. It's ternary, meaning it's not a binary, it's a system of three. It's more than two, right? You might appreciate the term Trinitarian, right? Because it's a third idea. You have to think about it differently. You can't think of it as on-off switch. You have to think of it as a dimmer switch, right? And this can be really hard if we're stuck in our binary, our either-or way of thinking. If you're kind of a black and white person, this kind of teaching is a challenge for you, because it's stretching your mind to see how can something be other than what it is. It's black or it's white. Well, no, reality is ultimately shades of gray. You see, the light of reality is fashioned, it's attached to a dimmer switch. And because of these frameworks, we fail not despite our best efforts, but because of them. You see, if you're stuck in a binary and you win some, lose some, then you failed some of the time. And that's because of the system. There wasn't any other option but to fail some of the time, because it's a win-some, lose-some paradigm. But if there's something a third way, then it's not a win-some, lose-some. It's a continuum of movement. It's flux. It's flow. It's dynamism. Okay? And so let me give you an example. And, you know, folks, you all know that I come from a Christian upbringing and perspective. And so the modern notion of Christianity sees people as either totally depraved, if you're kind of from a reformed position, or at the very least possessing a what most Christians call a sin nature. And that nature, or that depravity, totally offends God. Like, God is completely offended by that aspect of you. And this offense is said to have been removed by the work of Jesus. And it's only transferred to those who believe in the substitutionary work, meaning the transfer, the forgiveness of that offense is transferred to those who believe in the substitutionary work of Jesus on the cross, at which point you become a believer or a Christian, become a child of God, and the sin debt is removed, meaning that that stain of sin is removed. That's the typical modern evangelical Christian framework for seeing this and solving this. But, of course, you and the whole world know pretty darn well that the sin was actually not removed at all, was it? Only the one-day punishment for that sin. And so it's said, yeah, you're still going to sin even though you're a Christian, but your sins are at least forgiven. And that's the difference between you and everybody else, is their sins aren't forgiven. And so they'll all face the punishment for those sins, while Christians go on and sin unintentionally over and over again, but they won't be forgiven for it. And that's the subscript that starts to leave a bad taste in the mouths of everybody else. This creates what I call shampoo Christianity. And for the Christian, the experience is perpetually trying to be forgiven for the sins in your life that recur or that are never removed, right? You begin to see yourself as a flunky. You start out with great faith, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to quit this addiction. I'm going to finally clean up my mouth. I'm going to finally have pure motivations. I'm finally going to truly love others instead of just a few, right? But then you discover that you're really not getting that much better. Yeah, there's some improvement. Yeah, you quit some things. And yes, the struggle is real and you've overcome some things. You have some victory here and there. But for the most part, if you're truly honest with yourself, if you look deep inside your soul, you know that the seed of every sin still lives within you. And that it didn't get cut out with a melon ball cutter when Jesus came into your life, did it? And then they can beat you up and say, well, you're just not using enough faith. You're just not reading enough, studying enough, committed enough, good enough. You need to try harder, work harder, be more religious, be more faithful, right? It's the old beat down that we get through. We just call it discipleship, sanctification, right? It's this process of trying and failing and trying and failing. And yeah, so often the shampoo Christianity is this sin, wash, repeat, sin, wash, repeat. And you're only as good as your last forgiven sin. And thank goodness for church, because every weekend you get to go and be pure again, only to fall by Monday or Tuesday. You see, church kind of becomes the weekly bath. And the scenario is similar in all religions, right? If you're in Islam, you got to do your Hajj, you got to do your prayers, you've got to do, you know, your alms. In Judaism, you have to do your sacrifices, you have to do your, you know, your festivals, your feasts, your rituals. In other world religions, you've got to, you know, do your dance, you got to do your tribal thing, you have to talk to the elder, you have to, you know, there's all, everybody's got one. Everybody has a mechanism for their shampoo faith, but it's the same. It's on, off, and no system gets rid of it. Now, in Christianity, just like in others, there's the promise that one day it'll all be over when you die, and that's when real heaven exists, when this darkness is gone. But I think the gospel offers something different. This is a paradigm shift. You see, the gospel frees us from spinning around on the sin cycle of religion's purification machines. And Paul has shown us that the work of Christ, which in Galatians he shows us that the work of Christ was revealed in Jesus, but he also shows us by pointing out about Abraham, and by now you've already got this, I hope, that through Abraham, the work of Christ doesn't show up as Jesus, does it? Right? The Christ that Paul is talking about is not the Jesus that the disciples knew. He wasn't an eyewitness as the disciples were. He had the Christ experience, which was Jesus, but primarily through this cosmic work of Christ, just like Abraham. Just like anybody who ever comes to find an experience with God, it was given by this Christ experience, whether or not you tie that experience to Jesus. This is what Jesus meant when he said, you know, nobody comes to the Father except by me. He says, no, it's not that only Christians go to heaven. He's saying that if you ever have a God experience, it was because the Christ got you there. So this is what I'm saying when I say that the work of Christ revealed in Jesus, but sometimes in other ways, has actually freed us from this gap, right? That was the word justification earlier on in the chapters. This gap between ourselves and God that could exist between ourselves and our Maker. It's gone. There's no gap. You don't need a religious institution. This is Paul's point. You don't have to take your goat on a leash up and have it sacrificed and spread the blood splatter all over yourself anymore. You know, the gospel frees us from these external institutional powers and all these religious obligations. But it also frees us from the inside as well. And this is where Paul is getting at. And he calls our flesh the sarkos. He calls that nature, that shadow, the flesh. He says there's this interplay between the flesh and the spirit. And Paul isn't just referring to our physical bodies here in a Platonic way. You know, Plato was, you know, he believed that form was the spirit, and then the body was, you know, was bad, right? So spirit good and body bad. And, you know, he was always trying to get out of his body. And so we see this in many religions. They have the same Platonic framework. They follow Plato more than Jesus or anybody else. And they're just trying to get out of their early, dirty, nasty, sinful body and onto this disembodied spiritual reality. But that's not what the gospel teaches. You see, Paul's referring to our creaturely nature, our flesh, the shadow. It doesn't separate us from God. Did you hear me, folks? Your shadow does not separate you from God. It makes us want to separate from God. But that's not actually even possible. But it gives us the illusion that we can. It's kind of like a dog pulling on a leash. It's like we're the dog that if you unhook us, I'm bolting. That's what the shadow makes you do. And Kierkegaard, the great philosopher, one of my favorite philosophers, he would say that the shadow is the refusal to be ourself before God. The refusal to be ourself before God. You see, the book of John says this in John 3:20. It says, everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his works should be exposed. Right? This is the cockroach passage, as one pastor used to refer to it, the cockroach passage. Because the light, you know, you turn on the kitchen light and everything runs under the fridge, all the cockroaches. See, you don't want to be exposed by the light. That's what the shadow is like. And see, the Bible writers and religious authors and sacred texts get at this. They get at this thing, and they're accessing a part of our humanity that we need to pay attention to, because this dark place can go bad. And I've shown how the gospel frees us from religious practice in Galatians 5:6, and how we actually possess this internal freedom to overcome our shadow if we actually want to. I called it last week the three-sided cage that is just a prison that doesn't even have a wall in the back. And if you want, you can just walk right out. And for some reason, we choose not to. We hang right onto the bars. And Paul says that if we look to the institutional process for freedom, rather than do the soul work on the inside, then his words in Galatians 5:4 are that we've fallen from grace. We are severed from Christ. He's not mincing his words here. And so the connection between your external freedom, the freedom you want in your life of going where you want and doing as you please, having the money and the time and the freedom to love and enjoy your life, to live abundantly, all that comes first from living free on the inside. If you're not free from the dark shadow that's cast over their light on the inside, you're never going to have the wherewithal to live freely on the outside. You can't be successful in your career if you somehow have no security in your soul and you think that having a big title is going to make you into something that it never can do. You see, this is the point. Internal and external freedom are connected. And the shadow is not removed from our humanity. Did you hear me, folks? I don't care what ritual you say. I don't care what prayer you pray. I don't care what dance you do. Your shadow is not removed because the light is not removed. And it's not removed from our humanity on purpose. It's not removed by design because it's beautiful and it's necessary. When's the last time a pastor told you that? You see, it allows us to find our bearings. The light shines and the shadow is there and it illuminates distance. It creates texture. It creates an outline, a shape of the room. It gives us our bearings. It remains with us because, hear this, folks, God is ultimately more glorified by your struggle with your shadow than he is by the removal of your shadow. Yes, God is glorified by our struggle, not the removal. And that's why it remains. That's why it's there. It has to be there because the light is there. And it's teaching us something about ourselves. You see, Solomon got this, and the early Jews, when they built the temple, and at the dedication, he says, you know, the great God dwells in thick darkness or pitch black. This keeps us humble, and it's something all humanity shares in common. Faith working through love, as Paul puts it, is really all about our personal freedom. It's the freedom to walk right out of our three-sided prisons, or it's the freedom to cling tight and just live in a cage. The shadow and the light expose things. You can go to the real thing, which is an actual thing called light, or you can default to the not real thing called a shadow that doesn't exist. The moment the light goes out, it's gone. Or the moment more light comes in, it's gone. It's fleeting. Right? You have the choice, shadow or light, real or false. And so he's exposing the false self here, right? The freedom to abstain or freedom to indulge, both with the knowledge of what each choice brings to our life. This is what it's all about. Faith working through love means that we have one law only, and that's the law of love. You see, and that's not a lot of laws to obey. You've pulled us out of religious bondage, but we have to deal with the law of love on the inside. And whether this takes place depends entirely upon the maturity we possess through the dance of shadow and light. See, wisdom and maturity come from good judgment. And good judgment is another word for awareness, enlightenment, salvation. Good judgment or light comes from experience. And experience comes from bad judgment or shadow. You see how there's this interplay, this ebb and flow, this dance between shadow and light, this give and take, this learning, this falling down. It's like learning to walk. You stand and you can barely shake. You're shaking as a child. You have to hold on to the table next to you. And then if you take a step, you fall on your face. And over time, you push yourself back up. You learn, your legs gain strength, and pretty soon you walk on your own. And when you run, you fall. And then pretty soon you can run, but when you jump, you fall. Pretty soon you can run and jump, but when you really do a twirl, that's when you fall. It's all progression, folks. And this is Paul's message. Don't use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh. You see, freedom is the means to more freedom. If you want freedom in your life, take the freedom you have now and do something with it. Because like captivity, freedom is potentiated unto itself by how we dance. So if you want freedom, stop waiting around for one day to come. Stop waiting around to have something happen that is going to free you. Do something with the freedom you possess today. Walk out of your little prison today and let greater freedom come to you by you moving into conformity with all the small freedoms that you do possess today. Captivity, like freedom, is potentiated unto itself by how we dance. See, this is what he means. Don't use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh. Yeah, it means you're free to go and indulge. But is that wise? I mean, the chances of you becoming ensnared by your shadow life is more likely than you think. See, the dance is the design. You're not supposed to be free of the dance. You're supposed to learn how to dance. You're supposed to learn flow. And I have a program coming up, shameless plug, called The Way of Flow. And I'm going to teach people all about this. Freedom has shadow always within sight. Every bright day that you get up and choose light, you do so knowing the shadow is right there behind it. But it's not real. It's not lasting. The light is. You go after that. The dance, it's design. It's the reminder that the divine spirit and the human flesh coexist within each other. It's the indelible imprint of the Christ mystery, this word becoming flesh, like it says in John 1:14. It's tattooed upon every human soul so that none of us can miss it. You can't get rid of the shadow because it is the tattoo of the Christ mystery on every human soul. That's an amazing perspective. I hope that you can see this. And if you look over the field of view of all the world's religions, you realize really quickly that their goal is to get us out of our bodies in order to one day live in another place. But the gospel's goal is to put us back into our bodies with the ability to live from another place. Boy, folks, that is a huge distinction. If you capture that, your life will become increasingly free. You see, we each possess a body with an indwelling spirit of light. The only reason you know your shadow exists is because there's light within you. In that sense, we're all microcosms of this incarnation of Christ. That Christ mystery dwells within all humanity. We are all children. We all are image bearers. We are all carrying this divine DNA with us. But we have to learn the interplay, or the dance, of our light and shadow. And we're going to explore this next week when we learn the difference between desire and over-desire. So I hope you'll come back. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember, I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.